You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
October the 1st, 2020. We're finally into October. We're that much closer to the election date. And, of course, we're closer to starting hearings. Supposedly going to start October the 12th to get Amy Coney Barrett approved by the U.S. Senate to be our next Supreme Court justice. And the left is gearing up to do what it can to put a stop to it. Republicans control the White House and they control the Senate, and they got the votes. And some Democrat senators don't really want to meet with Barrett. And then you have this, Senator Dianne Feinstein, Democrat, California, top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee, is now challenging the October 12th date that Senator Lindsey Graham set for beginning the hearing. She said the timeline for consideration of Judge Barrett's nomination is incompatible with the Senate's constitutional role. And again saying, we're not going to have enough time. They're going to do whatever they can, but I don't think they can stop it. And Joe Biden again, once again asked in an interview yesterday, are you going to try to help pack the Supreme Court if you're elected? That came up in the debate the other day, and Joe did not really give an answer. And, of course, Chris Wallace in the bag, I guess, with Biden, didn't push that question, let him get away with it. He never answered. And when he was asked again the other night, last night, he said, well, I'm not going to play Trump's game. Trump's game, the game is, if you're going to be president, will you push to pack the court, to increase the number of justices? And Ruth Bader Ginsburg had said, I think 9 is the appropriate number. But Democrats want to add more to it to make sure they have more Democrats in play. The Washington, D.C. Board of Elections now telling residents who receive mail-in ballots for previous residents of their apartments or homes, please mark the ballots, return to sender, put them back in the mail. You're right. Yeah, you get a ballot at your home, and maybe you've already voted or you're going to vote anyway, and you got this, and it looks like it's made up for someone else, and we're going to trust that you're going to write on the return to sender, it's not me, I won't take this person's vote. That is one of the big issues across the nation. They're going out to addresses where folks have left. They don't live there. Someone else does now. And they may or may not be voting anyway. And they're going to deceased persons. I just had an extended conversation with John LaBoutière in the previous hour about mail-in ballot fraud. And I still think it exists. And he wants to continue to say, well, it doesn't really happen that way. And one of the points I made with him was that they had some ballots recently found in Pennsylvania discarded. They opened up 7 of them and said they were for Donald Trump. You tell me there's none of that going on? By the way, the mainstream media now moving forward calling for all upcoming debates to be canceled, telling Biden back out. You don't need to do that again. To me, that tells me, maybe not you, but it tells me they don't think Biden was as strong as he needed to be, and they thought they probably saw the best of him. Let's don't push our luck. Former First Lady Michelle Obama speaking out said, I was turned off by the President Trump's behavior during that first presidential debate. Well, that's no surprise to me. She said, Americans, you need to turn your disgust into votes for Biden. So says the former First Lady as they continue to do what they can to make sure they have the votes for Biden. In the meantime, members of the U.S. House of Representatives Nancy Pelosi says they can continue voting by proxy until November the 16th. She just won't bring them back. That's another excuse, of course, saying we got to be worried about COVID. You know what they're worried about in Southern California? The Imperial Valley. Over a period of 2.5 hours, 45 quakes above 3.0. All about 2 hours east of San Diego. Could be felt as far away as Riverside County. They're calling this a swarm of earthquakes. One did measure 4.9. Well, now, there might be more folks wanting to leave California. The taxes don't get you. The libs don't get you. The quakes are still possibly coming.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
We are slowly returning to normal as we knew life before COVID. Still, you need to be cautious. Make sure your business, school, place of worship are safe. Now, that's where Wellington Environmental can help. You can schedule professional fogging or deep cleaning with just a phone call. I'll give you a number. But first, you should know Wellington Environmental now offers fogging equipment you can use. These individual units are in high demand. Wellington has them available for now. They cost about $500, but my listeners get a big price break, a $100 discount. Save $100 just by saying you heard about it on Larry Connors USA. For more information on getting your personal fogging device or to schedule professional fogging, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
I guess I grew up on an older road, a pedal to the metal, always did what I told. Until I found out that my brand new clothes came secondhand from the rich kids next door. And I grew up fast, I guess I grew up mean. There's a thousand things inside my head I wish I ain't seen. And now I just wander through a real bad dream, or feeling like I'm coming apart at the seams. But thank you, Jack Daniels, old number 7. Tennessee whiskey got me drinking in heaven and a...
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I got to tell you, when I sat there as the chairman and we were doing these investigations time and time and time and time again, the biggest publications, the so-called news organizations, were totally incurious because it was negative about Hillary Clinton and her candidacy. And then about the Obama-Biden administration, they never asked a question or had a peep. But the moment Donald Trump was going to become the president of the United States, oh my gosh, we're worried about everything.
Those are the words of former congressman from Utah, Jason Chaffetz. He was heading up the House Oversight Committee and investigating the so-called investigation of Russian collusion, trying to find out what's really behind this thing. How did it happen? How was it done? And the Mueller investigation. What was going on? And as he said, any time it had anything that might make Mueller, Comey, Hillary, the FBI in general, Obama looked bad, they walked away. The mainstream media had nothing to report, nothing to see here. Keep moving on. But anytime something would come forward and make it appear that Trump is involved in something, we're not really sure what, but he was involved in something. You got to get something. Well, they flock in like vultures over a carcass in the desert. And, of course, we now have this investigation going on now as Senator Lindsey Graham is carrying out another look at how this has been going on. This is the latest in a series of hearings looking at the activities of investigators involved in Crossfire Hurricane, which is what it was called as they were trying to prove Trump had a Russian collusion activity. Democrats, of course, are saying, look at the timing of this. Look at it, right, leading up to the election. Well, if he hadn't done it at any point, then he wouldn't have anything you bring up now, could he? And the timing part of it has to do as to what's going to be available that could be brought up in public hearing. And when questioned, the former FBI director, he's appearing via viral, I should say, a telepatch, a communication link, not actually in the midst of the senators. But he was saying, in the main, it was done by the book. It was appropriate. It was essential that it be done. But he acknowledges, yeah, there were parts of it that were concerning. Parts of it were concerning. Listen to a sample of the questions being thrown at him by Republican senators in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing.
What effort had been made to verify the dossier in October?
I don't know specifically.
Did you ask any questions or do any due diligence on this at all?
I don't remember anything about the facts that have been revealed recently about the subsource.
Wait, with all due respect, you don't seem to know anything about an investigation that you ran.
That pretty much says it all. You were the FBI director. You were running it. He didn't know about some of this latest information that supposedly came out. I don't remember. It doesn't ring a bell, he says, about some of the other information, like regarding Hillary and some memos going back and forth, nor the fact that the subsource was already a questionable threat to our U.S. national security. Comey is suddenly, I don't know, I don't remember. I think I had tuna salad the other day. I think I had that. I can remember that. And I can remember enough to write a book and put it out and present a book, but I can't remember enough to answer your questions right now. Once again, to Senator Lindsey.
Do you recall getting an inquiry from the the intelligence community in September 2016 about a concern that the Clinton campaign was going to create a scandal regarding Trump in Russia?
It doesn't ring bells with me.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty stunning thing. It didn't ring a bell.
Didn't ring a bell. How would this not ring a bell? This is part of the testimony that came the other day. Information, newly declassified information, released by the Director of National Intelligence, John Ratcliffe. And according to the declassified information, September 2016, U.S. Intel officers forwarded an investigative referral on Hillary Clinton purportedly approving, quote, a plan concerning U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump and Russian hackers hampering U.S. elections, end of quote, in order to distract the public from her email scandal. Now, that referral was sent to Comey, who says, doesn't ring a bell, and Deputy Assistant Director of Counterintelligence, Peter Smurf, Stroke, you know, the one with the love of Lisa Page, who we already know lied. So Graham asked Comey, you don't remember getting an investigatory lead? Putting forward an investigative referral to Comey and Stroke regarding Clinton's approval of a plan about Trump as a means of distraction? Doesn't ring a bell. And then, of course, in addition to that memo, and apparently there are evidence that some notes were taken at that time by former CIA Director John Brennan, about that very fact, about that Hillary was wanting something to hurt Donald Trump. John Brennan's handwritten notes show that he briefed former President Obama on the information. And again, this is in September 2016, before the vote was taken. According to Ratcliffe's letter, the intelligence included, quote, alleged approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016, of a proposal from one of her foreign policy advisors to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal claiming interference by Russian security services. That's damning. It at least needs to be answered. Well, we got an answer from a Clinton spokesman. Says it's all baseless BS. and a representative for the Senate Intel Committee for a Democrat, Vice Chair Mark Warner, said, this is Russian disinformation. I love it. They want to believe the Russians all the time until it comes to something that might be harmful. And that brings to mind the other issue, and that is the fact that it was clear that the source they were relying on as they were pulling all this stuff together to go after Trump and anybody they could, that the guy himself they were relying on had already been identified as a threat to our national security and not credible. Fred Flights we have on our program from time to time. I did not get a chance to book him for today. Maybe I can get him tomorrow for the first hour. Fred Flights, president and CEO of the Center for Security Policy, previously held security, national security jobs with the CIA, the DIA, Department of State, and so forth. He wrote a piece that appears on Fox News right now, and he talks about that letter from Director of National Intelligence John Ratcliffe given to the Senate Judiciary Committee, the one I just read to you. He said that was a true bombshell, alleging that U.S. intel was weaponized in an effort to defeat Donald Trump in 2016. And again, this letter the CIA discovered in mid-2016, that Russia believed Democrat presidential candidate Hillary Clinton personally approved a scheme to deflect attention from her email server scandal by ginning up a narrative that the Trump campaign was collaborating with Russia in order to win. And it also, according to Fred Flight, says certainly sounds plausible since it does coincide with the effort funded by the Democrat National Committee by former British spy Christopher Steele to assemble a salacious, false anti-Trump dossier to be used by the FBI to justify spying on a member of the Trump campaign. That's how they got their FISA warrants. And Comey, on one of his answers yesterday, was saying, well, I thought we had a better handle. I did not know it was approved that easily. I thought checks were in place to make sure there was no violation and a FISA warrant was being properly documented to be released and therefore done it. And in other words, here is the head of the FBI saying, yeah, I'm in charge, but I'm not. Oh, that's typical. That's typical. Now, Ratcliffe admits, and let me go again on his letter that Flights points out. The letter from Ratcliffe, and again, this is the Director of National Intelligence, something he gave the Senate Judiciary Committee. He said the letter said that President Barack Obama and other senior officials were briefed on the reported Clinton-approved scheme to smear the Trump campaign July 26, 2016, and that this matter was referred to the FBI September 7, 2016. Now, in July 26, 2016, we were all about these Clinton emails and her private server and what she turned over and what she dumped and erased because she said, it's just personal stuff, you didn't need it, making her own decision as to what we got and what we didn't get. And then, of course, even the FBI was informed about it in September, still ahead of the November election. Now, Ratcliffe concedes, I don't know whether this is Russian disinformation or if Clinton actually approved this plot. He said there are other related intelligence that had to remain classified. But as Fred Flights points out, well, so what if it is just a disinformation campaign and yet it's been dropped right in the lap of the CIA and the FBI? What did they do about it? Which brings the question that Fred says. What did senior Obama administrations know about this and when did they know it? How involved were President Obama, Vice President Biden, National Security Advisor Susan Rice, in this same scheme? What is the explanation for why the FBI decided to act on the fraudulent Steele dossier, but apparently ignored the alleged Clinton campaign smear to smear the Trump campaign? Those are all legitimate questions. Now, if you can turn around and say, well, this was a Russian disinformation, here's proof of it, okay. But until then, those questions are valid. They are alive and active, and they need to be answered. Comey, of course, this is not the first time he's had memory lapses to avoid incriminating himself and any weaponization of intel helping the Obama administration go after the Trump campaign. And then again, part of the reasons was that all of this involved also a guy that they were relying on for information that had already been discredited by the CIA, by the FBI, known to be a spy and not verifiable and not good, and they rely on him to carry out their inquiry to see if Trump has anything to do with Russia? And where's the mainstream media in all this? Where are they covering it? Are they doing anything about it? No, they're really not. And they're not going to. They're going to avoid it as much as possible. Rather talk about Trump and hate crimes and race. I want you to hear from Jason Chaffetz when we continue on the next side of this break. And gives you a clear idea of exactly how the news media handles stories for or against Trump.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
They put Donald Trump Jr. on the cover of Time magazine for saying, you know, caught red-handed. Hunter Biden, where you have a Senate report detailing all of this, the financial transactions, putting money in his pocket while Joe Biden's the vice president, and there's nothing out there. It is absolutely shameful. It is an embarrassment to this country, and shame on those national media organizations who never report this and say, oh, it's been debunked. Joe Biden said it's been debunked by who? Nobody. He should have gotten a follow-up question, and he should be asked that question every single time the media has a chance.
Yeah. That is Jason Chaffetz again, former congressman from Utah, and served on the House Oversight Committee, and talking about how the mainstream media has two different approaches when it comes to a story damaging to Trump or helping him. And in this case, going after Biden and Hunter Biden would be helping Trump, so they don't want to do it. And he's absolutely right. It got raised briefly at the debate the other night, but it was not hammered home, not like Wallace doing almost a 20-second intro to ask Trump about, will you say you hate groups and say it the way we want you to. But it just got passed over because Biden said there's no truth to that. It's been debunked. I agree with Chaffetz. Who said it's been debunked? Give me the source. Chaffetz said this was not done by a field office somewhere looking at Hunter Biden's ties and money from overseas while his father was vice president. He said it was being done at the main headquarters of the FBI, one of the most consequential, important investigations when you go through that hearing. And he said, Comey did, time and time again. I don't recall. I didn't look at that. So there's nothing to see here, according to the mainstream media. But boy, if they have anything that suggests Donald Trump did something wrong, they will do that. Ted Cruz summed it up in an interview segment he was having with Chris Cuomo on CNN and talking about, we already know how you guys are wired.
Chris, there was a time when CNN actually cared about being journalistic and talking about facts. Donald Trump broke you guys. I mean, you're just, really? Your entire show, your entire network now is just how much you hate Trump.
There's no doubt about that. I cut off, didn't let you hear it, but let me add it. I don't want to be accused of not giving the other side response. Chris Cuomo said, I don't hate Trump. Okay, there's his answer. I'll leave it to you to decide if you accept it or not. But let me give you another example. The New York Times, the morning release that I get every day in my mailbox. This is written supposedly as a report, an analysis of what's going to come up, I guess. I don't know if it's supposed to be a report or analysis, but let me give you this. It shows up and says, good morning, the next presidential debate may be different. NFL postpones the game, and Trump is trying to prevent a normal election. Now, if you look at that, Trump's trying to prevent a normal election. And while you get into the article, it says he's afraid he can't meet Joe Biden, and so now he's trying to do anything he can to prevent a normal election. This is an analysis. It's a commentary, and yet it's staged. It shows up almost like news content, that it's a fact. They're treating it as news when obviously it's not. It's an opinion. All you have to do is label it, but be honest about it. You know, you see some of these ads sometimes and on the internet or on the wire, and it starts saying, this will do this for you, and you look at it, but it's not really a news story. It says, this is an ad. Sometimes we're stupid enough, we have to be told it's an ad, we don't get it. We'll be joined by Zach Smith in a moment. Stand by.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Glad to have him back on board with us. Zach Smith, a contributor to the Daily Signal and also a member of the Heritage Foundation on expert constitutional law. Glad to have you back with us, Zach.
Thanks so much for having me on, Larry.
Yeah, I want to get into this inquiry underway right now that Senator Lindsey Graham is running regarding Crossfire Hurricane. But before we get into that, just in the preceding segment with you, and also even the one a little bit before, I was talking about how the mainstream media has its one view of how to present something if it has something that would hurt Donald Trump. Another way, say, as in ignoring it, it would be anything that would make him look good. And Jason Chaffetz, former U.S. congressman from Utah, said you can clearly see it the way they're treating the Hunter Biden story, and yet Time magazine put Donald Trump Jr. on the front cover suggesting he might be involved in something wrong. What's your take on that?
Well, I certainly think anytime there's an allegation of wrongdoing, it's certainly worth taking a closer look and doing further investigations. And, you know, in the report that was released on Hunter Biden last week, you know, there were implications that he was visiting, prostitutes, engaging in other questionable activity that potentially have implications and ties back to human trafficking rings. Now, you know, I can't speak to the specifics. I think we need further investigation into that. But, you know, human trafficking, sex trafficking, it's a major issue our country is facing today. And frequently, if there is human trafficking involved, anything along those lines.
Oops, wait, you there? Well, I guess we're going to have to reestablish. We'll get that reestablished. And he was referring, of course, to the report that, in fact, Hunter Biden not only was linked to some groups that might be involved in human trafficking, but that also got a lot of money, maybe up to $4 million, from the wife of a former Moscow mayor. Zach, we got you back online. Go ahead, sir.
I am. Sorry about that.
That's all right.
I was just saying, human trafficking, it's a big problem our country's facing today. And so if there is any implication that human trafficking rings could be involved, it's certainly something worth taking a closer look at.
But it came up just briefly in the debate the other night, and Chris Wallace didn't push forward because Biden, as Trump tried to make something of it, said it's been debunked. Where's it been debunked?
Well, again, I think, you know, we saw kind of just the surface into a lot of these allegations being scratched in the report that was released last week and the debate that occurred earlier this week. And so, you know, anytime there's an indication, you know, there's probable cause to suggest, and I'm not saying there is probable cause, but, you know, there's an indication that something unethical or illegal may have taken place. By someone very close to the, you know, a political candidate, it's certainly worth doing a deeper dive and seeing exactly what's going on.
So what we have underway right now is Lindsey Graham carrying out as the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, going back and looking at how this whole event went down and what was done and why was it done and what was the background for it. And basically, a lot of it already suggesting that, yeah, the DOJ, the FBI, CIA were all being weaponized, in specifically looking at a letter that was presented and apparently referred to handwritten notes by then former CIA Director John Brennan, that he had briefed President Obama on the information that, quote, alleged approval by Hillary Clinton on July 26, 2016 of a proposal to vilify Donald Trump by stirring up a scandal. In other words, pull attention away from my email scandal at that time. That's pretty damning.
Well, I think what we've heard, you know, in everything related to this entire, you know, crossfire hurricane, which is what they were calling this Russia collusion investigation, there's a lot of troubling facts that we know right now, and there's still a lot of information that we don't know. And so I think it's good that Lindsey Graham is holding hearings, doing a deep dive into this. But I think what we should all be more interested in and kind of interested to see what comes out of is, you know, Bill Barr appointed John Durham, the U.S. attorney in Connecticut, to investigate the origins of this Russia collusion probe. And it's morphed into a criminal investigation currently, which means that Durham has a lot of tools at his disposal. He has subpoena power at his disposal. And we've seen one prosecution come out of it so far. Kevin Kleinsmith, an FBI lawyer who pled guilty to altering an email that the FBI relied on in getting a FISA warrant authorized against Carter Page, a Trump campaign advisor. And so Durham's in the process of conducting his investigation. Everything we know about Durham suggests he's a thorough, thoughtful prosecutor. And I think it's really John Durham's investigation that we should all be interested in and really keeping a close eye on.
Since you brought that up, this information being released that I just read, because, as you said, the Attorney General Barr appointed him to start last year on the Russian probe inquiry. It's not clear the information I just read then is considered part of Durham's investigation, but how could it not be an essential issue going forward?
Well, look, I think John Durham, again, he has a great reputation. He's been doing this for almost 38 years as a federal prosecutor. And he's conducted investigations into FBI and CIA misconduct under both Democratic and Republican administrations prior to the Trump administration. And so, you know, we know that he's talked to John Brennan. We know that he subpoenaed documents. We've heard rumors that his investigation is now potentially looking into improprieties by the Clinton Foundation. And so there's a lot of pinnacles to his investigation outstanding still. And I'm hopeful that once he's done, we'll certainly get several key questions answered. And if appropriate, you know, criminal indictments will follow.
I'm looking at some statements by a spokeswoman for the Senate Intel Committee Vice Chair, Senator Warner, Democrat of Virginia, saying the stuff I just read to you about this email and Brennan's note to the president about what Hillary wanted was, they say, it's Russian disinformation. Now, in the same story, according to Ratcliffe in a statement to Fox News, he said, to be clear, this is not Russian disinformation and has not been assessed as such by the Intel Committee. He said, but I will be briefing Congress on sensitive sources and methods in the coming days. So there is more to it, obviously.
Absolutely. And the more we find out, the more troubling it becomes. You know, one of the main ways that our intelligence community finds out if someone is spying for a foreign government are getting information about foreign disinformation activities or a whole host of other activities is through the FISA warrant application process at the FISA court. The FISA court is a special court designed to hear and review foreign intelligence-related warrant applications. And it's very secretive. It's very locked down, obviously, because of the sensitive nature of the information being revealed to the court and the sensitive nature of the information being sought. And what we've learned so far is that, in many ways, the FBI and the Obama-era Department of Justice were abusing that process, and looks like they were giving false information to the FISA court. And so that's very concerning, and I think it's very important for the Senate committee and for the Durham probe to both drill down, find out exactly who knew what when, and what information, false information, was provided to the FISA court, so, and how can we prevent this going forward?
So Lindsey Graham brought that up yesterday with the former FBI director Comey about this letter referring that we're going to do this with Clinton pushing for it as a means of distracting from her email inquiry that's underway to make, in other words, do what they could to hurt the Trump campaign. Graham's asking Comey about that communication, and Comey says, that doesn't ring any bells with me. Graham's response is, that's a pretty stunning thing. It doesn't ring a bell. You get this inquiry from the intel community to look at the Clinton campaign trying to create a distraction, accusing Trump of being a Russian agent or a Russian stooge. I mean, I have to agree, too. I mean, you don't forget something like that. That's not like, what did you have to eat last Thursday night?
Well, look, I don't think Jim Comey did himself any favors with his performance yesterday in front of the Senate committee that was holding hearings. You know, either let's put it this way, it doesn't paint a good look for him. The most generous reading of his testimony was that he was woefully out of touch with what was going on in one of the most important FBI investigations, or was just an incompetent leader of the FBI. And that's the most generous case.
I think you're right. I think you're right. You can't be much more generous than that, other than saying, well, when he smiles, it's a nice smile, and he's a very tall guy.
Exactly. No, that.
Go ahead.
Sure. That's exactly right. And, you know, I'm hopeful that John Durham will get to the bottom of this, and we'll get some answers.
All right. Zach Smith, again, I appreciate you sharing your time with us, sir.
Thanks so much, Larry. Take care.
You bet. Zach Smith from the Heritage Foundation, contributor to the Daily Signal. Let me shift gears for you. You know we do that a lot in this program. We shift gears often, so I don't stay in any one place very long. Coming up, I'm going to take you to California on some new rules that are going to be imposed on major corporations demanding that they have to do this or else. And then, when it comes to free speech on college, a survey of which college where you might find the best example where free speech is allowed. If you believe the survey, it's a very interesting number one.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So let me bring you up to speed on what's happening in California, which, by the way, I reported earlier, they've had what they call a swarm of earthquakes, 45 to 50 of them, about 2 hours outside San Diego, and one measuring about 4.5, the others around 2 or so. And they're all wondering, is this the coming of the big one? Well, of course, no one knows for sure. They're trying to tell everybody, no. But I do see an earthquake here, and that's going to be an earthquake in numerous California-based corporations when it comes to their boardroom. See, in 2018, the Democrat governor, Jerry Brown, signed into law California Senate Bill 826, requiring publicly held corporations based in the state have a minimum of one woman on their board of directors by the end of 2019. In other words, if you're going to operate in our state, you have to have at least one woman on your board of directors. And by the end of July 2021, companies are going to hire at least two more women on boards of five members. And if they have six or more, they have to have at least three women. Firms failing to comply will face a fine. Now listen, I raised daughters, and I want my daughters to have as much opportunity as anyone else. But they also know they are supposed to earn it, not just get it as a token. And yeah, there are probably cases where some of these good old boy corporations decided, we don't want any women around here. We can't tell our jokes and do the things we like to do. But this is a new age and time. It should be. I thought we kind of did away with that with what we saw with Dolly Parton 9 to 5 and also the Mad Men TV series. We're in a different time. But now, hundreds of California-based corporations have to do this under a new bill signed by Governor Newsom. Not only the number of women, as I said, but they list it as racial or sexual minorities, which, again, is an effort to make sure everyone has an equal chance. That would include Black, Latino, Asian, Pacific Islander, Native American, Native Hawaiian, Alaskan Native, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And by the end of 2022, on boards with four to nine directors, they're going to have at least two directors. You don't comply, you're going to have $100,000 first violation, $300,000 for repeat violations. And they're making a bigger deal out of it now based on race. And they're doing that because of the unrest regarding George Floyd, they say. I think the corporations, if they're smart and truly beholding and doing what they should for their stockholders, are going to do what's needed. And why not look for bright women or bright persons of minority groups? Why not? And in fact, some of those bright minority groups are the ones actually forming their own corporations. But when you look at some of the business groups that are going to have to, some of the biggest companies that are going to have to do something about it, TiVo, there are no women on the entertainment technology firm's seven-member board of directors. None. Skechers, that Shoemaker, nine-person board, all men. Means they've got to hire at least a woman for the board by the end of the year. Hey, my daughter's available. Can she stay here and just do it by telecommunication? Alphabet, the parent company of Google, will have to hire another woman to its 11-person board. Currently has two. Apple has an eight-member board. Only two are women. Now, to avoid a fine, they're going to have to hire at least one more woman by the end of 2021. Facebook, in order to meet the new law, will have to hire one more female director. They have nine on their board. Two are women. Now they're going to have to hire one more. Kind of good to some extent, though, to see some of these organizations forced, who we were told were all about inclusivity, that they had to be ordered to do so. So a survey was done as to a list of free speech on college campus. 2020 report. What's the climate for free speech on America's college campus? Just published. First of its kind, interactive, online, 20,000 students ranking the best and worst schools for free speech and open discourse at 55 U.S. institutions. Top five best schools include Kansas State University, Texas A&M, University of California, Los Angeles, and Arizona State University. Those are apparently the top five where students are free to speak their minds. University of California? Huh. The worst performing schools including Syracuse University, Dartmouth College, Louisiana State University, and the University of Texas. Well, that's a little bit surprising, University of Texas or Louisiana State. And in fact, LSU and UT had the unfortunate distinction of getting a red light, rating them as they need to prioritize other values above free speech. But who came in at the bottom, at the worst? DePaul University. Who got top honors for being the best college campus for free speech? I have to admit, this is a surprise to me. University of Chicago. The University of Chicago rated best among the students anyway, for encouraging and allowing free speech. So now you know, at least based on the survey. Wonder if Andrew in Chicago is listening today, or he's going to find out about this a little bit later. I'll probably hear from him at some point. We'll be back tomorrow. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.